Blog Talk Radio.
Hello. Everyone in Blog Talk Radio land, and welcome to our show. I'm really glad that you are listening, and let me give you our call-in number. It's 347-326-9915, and that again is 347-326-9915. And tonight we have a really special guest known as the American Monk, Dr. Stephen Harefield. And Dr. Harefield has quite a biography. I won't go into all of it because I want him to tell you a lot about himself. But I will say that he was one of the Edgar Cayce Foundation intuitives. Edgar Cayce is one of the greatest psychics, supposedly, that ever lived. So in order to be part of his group of intuitives, you'd have to be really, really good. They don't take anybody. They test you and retest you and test you again. And he passed all this, Dr. Stephen Harefield. He passed it all. So he's an author. Dr. Harefield is. He's a lecturer, and he studied under Tibetan masters, along with many, many other things. In fact, I would say Dr. Harefield has led many, many lifetimes, and I am very, very grateful to welcome him to the show, and I'm going to let him tell you about himself. I would like to just say quickly that the piece you heard at the beginning of the show was Handel's Messiah. And I would like to thank Handel, although he's been gone from Earth for many, many years, but that piece remains quite beautiful. No matter when it's played or how it's played, it seems to uplift the spirit, and I believe that's what we're trying to do while we're on Earth's plane. And I would like to say a quick thank you to Blog Talk Radio, to Christy Sweet, to John Sweet, and to all the people that have made this possible. Blog Talk Radio, in my humble opinion, is way, way ahead of its time, and it is literally bringing the world together as one. We are being heard all over this earth, plus they allow anyone 24/7 to go into the archives and download the programs in case you didn't get to hear it live. So without even thinking about it, they're just a part of what's coming. And I really am glad that I kind of jumped in here when I did and was a part of this, because it's real, real magical. And I really, really enjoy it. Let me go ahead and bring Dr. Harefield on. Hello?
Well, hello there, young lady, and you know, I loved your intro. The music was just awesome. Yeah, that was just so good to hear. Handel was a magnificent musician, and you know what? I betcha he heard you.
And you think he could, huh?
You know, a lot of us in this part of the world look at death as a final thing, and what we're going to find out ultimately is it may not be. And what we may find out is we can still hear people after we've passed and what they have to say. So when we offer compliments to those that have transitioned, I'm sure they're grinning.
They can hear it. Well, you know, his Messiah was written very quickly, as I understand it, and it simply has withstood time.
Yes, absolutely.
And I think that for you, because you're a monk. And I wanted to kind of elevate the spirit level here. Well, now when, you know, I read that you were a monk, are you a non-denominational monk kind of, Dr. Herfel, or are you...
Well, my first question would be is, what in the world is a non-denominational monk? When you study in the Far East, and forgive my demented sense of humor, I was studying as a Tibetan Buddhist monk, which is not a religion, it's a philosophy. Mm-hmm. It's a perspective on life and how to live in the highest regard and the highest esteem of life. But when we say non-denominational, I'm not sure I know what that means. Catholic monk? No.
All right. Well, it's kind of like part of all of it. You know, I would say, you know, as we become one world without walls, interplanetarianly blended, then I see kind of in my third eye that we have no name for any, you know, particular religion. And I thought when I was reading about you that perhaps you were already there. Although, you know, I kind of described you as a Buddhist monk. I don't know why, but that kind of, that's stuck in my head. Is that not correct?
Well, you know, it's interesting in the way that you offered the wording of it, because the truth of the matter is the individual on your show tonight is more a blend. I'm Hindi, I'm Buddhist, I'm Christian, I'm Lao Tzu. There is just many aspects to myself. I don't believe that if we follow one simple path, what we're following is potentially a path of limitation. One of the things that was taught as a monk is do not allow anything to limit you in your state of consciousness and your state of being, because anything that limits you keeps you away from the idea of consciousness, keeps you away from the idea of the Christed being, and keeps you away from our true birthright as the human.
Well, when you say that, do you mean like limit you, like rules and regulations and all the things some of us were raised with, like especially if we were Catholicism, they have a lot of rules that limit you.
I love to share with people that I myself am a recovering Catholic.
Okay.
I was born into that, and my dad wanted me to become a priest. And when he found out that I had become a Buddhist priest, he was, let's just say, he was not excited.
He wasn't a happy camper.
No.
And how did that happen?
When I said to him, Dad, you just said you wanted me to become a priest. So I did. And he said, that's when I realized that's not what he meant.
That's not what he meant. Well, from what I was reading about you, you were in the Vietnam War, am I right?
Yes.
And yes. That was a transformational period in your life?
Well, when I was in Southeast Asia, Vietnam, it was a military thing. But as I later realized, there were a lot of things that went on in my life that weren't accidental, coincidental, that happened for a reason. I mean, when I was in Southeast Asia, as an example, I was walking down the street in a small Vietnamese village, hamlet, village, city, whatever you want to call it, in Quang Ai. And I looked across the street, and there was this gentleman in crimson and golden robes. And he and I locked eyes. He scurried across the street, and he walked right up to me, stuck his finger in my face, and said, young man, if you do not learn to use what you have, it will destroy you. Well, he had my attention, and that was my first encounter with what I would call a master and or a teacher. But what he was talking about was my intuitive ability. Zen, in Southeast Asia, that's their tradition. Zen actually stands for fast path, or the proper use of intuition, or inner tuition, or inner learning, if you will. And that was where my journey, we could say, consciously began. And from that point on, I followed their teachings, what they had to say, and that led me to so many places in the world, like India and Nepal.
Oh, my goodness. So was this like a spirit guide that appeared to you, that put his finger in your face and said that?
No, this was literally a monk. He was a Zen monk, and he just walked right up to me. I mean, Zen, again, stands for fast path.
Okay.
They use intuition in their teaching. Their teaching is about achieving enlightenment at a faster rate. Instead of taking every second of every day to do it, let's do it now. And that's not exactly the idea, but
right.
In other words, it's an accelerated tradition. And no, he was very literally a monk, Master Han. And he just came right up to me and made that statement and caught my attention. And I began to work with him while I was in Southeast Asia. When I was not out in the field, I was in their monastery learning. And that's where my path once again consciously began.
Well, would you say that being in Vietnam and going through and seeing what you saw was an awakening time for you, to the point that you would have even known that this person was before you, or what they were saying? I would say that instead of before you, but what they were really saying?
I would say absolutely. I have learned through the years that there's no such thing as a coincidence, that everything happens for a reason and has a purpose. And in retrospect, looking back at that, I had no option. I was supposed to go to Vietnam. I was supposed to encounter this man, if for no other reason, for what it led me to in later years of my life. And it has been an honor and a treasure to me, especially in light of the fact that being able to sit back and go, wow, this all makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things that, Joy, that I do write about and I share with people in all of my works, no matter what the title of the book is.
Right.
It's about consciousness. It's about understanding of self, separated from the idea of ego. And that's one of the things I learned through the tradition of my teachers, which actually began in Southeast Asia. Mm-hmm.
Well, how many books have you written?
Actually, four.
Oh, okay.
And working on the fifth. And the title of the fifth is The 12 Sacred Laws of Karma. And we could basically say this is why stuff happens. Because of this.
The 12 steps of karma?
12 sacred principles of karma.
Oh, okay. That's not quite as cut and dried. Yeah, because we hear karma, and, you know, to say it's sacred kind of resonates with me, because it is. You know, it comes back immediately, or it seems to, and wakes us up, maybe.
Well, the truth of karma is it's an equalizer. One of the things I love to share with people, Joy, is simply this, that we are a divine result of karma. When the Creator created life, it created cause, and it became first cause, and human is the result of that divine intention. And a lot of us would rather, if you will, manipulate it into something it was never intended to be. But we could literally state that human being is a end result of divine karmic intention.
Now, how much choice did we have in this?
Try none.
None? Oh, don't say that.
Well,
New
no,
age.
No, you know, a lot of people get upset
yeah.
when I'm doing a seminar, and I do these things all over the world, and I look at them and say, look, here's the deal. We have choice.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have will. What we have is the right to choose how we're going to experience what we're going to experience, not that we can avoid it.
And
so many people get upset at me with that. But when we look at the idea, let me ask you a simple question. Joy, do you believe in the idea that there's no such thing as a coincidence?
I actually do believe that.
Okay, then if there's no such thing as a coincidence, then that means everything occurs with divine intention. And if everything occurs with divine intention, what free will do you actually have?
Only to accept the divine intention with a smile or be miserable.
and we are limited to precisely that. And a lot of people don't want to know that. I have free will. I can pick and choose. I can pick my destiny, yada, yada, yada. You know, I was actually told in the early 70s that I was going to end up being a teacher, if you will, and that I would end up being known throughout the world, and I would end up writing 7 books. And I was told this by monks. And I spent 14 years going, I'm not going to do that. Now, here I was in the high-tech industry, mainframe supercomputers. That's what I did for those 14 years. And then woke up one morning and went, I'm not going to do this anymore. And I quit. My boss didn't even believe it. And they finally gave me my severance pay. And for a couple of years, I did not do anything other than get actually my PhD in the field of metaphysics. Why, I don't know, because that's a field that, other than quantum mechanics, they don't understand. And then one morning, very literally, I woke up and thought, you know, I've got to put this down on paper. And I began writing. And my first book was called Once Upon a Parable. And it was really written as one 300-page Zen koan. A Zen koan is a puzzle. Its purpose is designed to make you think. And by the time I got done, I thought, what in heaven's name is this?
Mm-hmm.
And I began looking at it, and I thought, this is going to be fun. If people can understand this, they can understand a lot of things. And, of course, it evolved. And since that time, I've written several more, my latest being A Metaphysical Interpretation of the Bible, the next one being, very simply, The 12 Sacred Laws of Karma. I think there are things that people in this part of the world really, I don't know if I want to use the word should, but could know that the blame game is baloney. When you blame, you do not own you. When you blame, you do not own your emotions. When you blame, you are actually acknowledging the fact that someone else is in control of you. And most people don't understand that. And in my book, The 12 Sacred Laws of Karma, that's outlined.
That's outlined. Well, but then I'm kind of confused because let's say the divine decided that you were going to be a monk and that you were going to write 7 books or whatever. Then how would you actually fit the other part into it, that you chose it or your karma put you into that path? Although, actually, I can see where your karma, depending on your past lives, perhaps if there are past lives, would have done that.
They are.
They got you ready. So you've written 4 books out of the 7 that you're going to write. Wow. You know, I saw the book you wrote, the Bible, and I thought, you know, that's a lot of reading. I'm not sure I could even understand that. You know, it was a little intimidating, and maybe you can bring it down to kind of layman's terms, like for me, or I don't know.
I'd be happy to. One, nobody wants to read the Bible. One, the primary reason is, unless they're into dogma, they don't understand it. I mean, most people don't realize is that book has been highly controlled. You couldn't own it as a private citizen until the 1600s. That's basically 300, 1600s, that's basically 1,300 years after it was formalized and written. You couldn't own it as a private citizen. And if you did, and if you were found that you owned it, you would be burned at the stake. So who wants to own a book you're going to be killed for? And what we're really looking at is conditioning. But what I simply did was, after studying the Vedic text, the Buddhist Sutra, and the ancient knowledge of the ancient world, and because my master's degree is in religion and theology, and through the studying of the Bible, all of a sudden, the elevator went all the way up and went, wait a minute, I've seen these words before. I understand these words. And what was attempted to be done was take all of the dogma, all of the punishment, all of the be damned stuff out of it and mm-hmm. said, ladies and gentlemen, here it is. And what I found was it's the perfect path to consciousness. It's the perfect path to enlightenment. Once you read through all the punishing, dogmatic baloney, I mean, come on. Let me just, if I might, a very simple example. The Christ himself said, who was a master, not something to worship. If this person did what he did because he wanted a religion created out of him, come on. That's one huge ego. And why would anybody follow that large of an ego? Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
It would make absolutely no sense to me, yet we do that in this world. But Christ said a house divided cannot stand against itself. Okay, let's mm-hmm. look at the initial concept of religion. There is a heaven and a hell. Excuse me, but is that not a division?
Yeah.
And there's a God and a devil, mm-hmm. which means there's a benevolent being and there's a torturous being.
That's right.
Excuse me a second. Is that, correct me if I'm wrong, not also division? Now, if the Christ himself said, do not be divided, why does the idea of religion teach division? That's easy. It's a walk in the park. Why? Because what's the best way to control humankind and to keep them off base and to keep them away from who they are? Division. Keep them divided within themselves. So when I wrote this, and you're right, an 800-page book is intimidating. And I got to tell you something. When I was in high school and they wanted me to write a 500-word essay, I'm mm-hmm. telling you, I'm sitting there going, 498, 499, 500.
Knew it, huh?
Done. So when I told that I was going to write 7 books, I wanted to throw up all over planet Earth. But
wow, and here you are, 800. How many pages are in that book?
808 pages.
808. And what is the name again?
A Metaphysical Interpretation of the Bible.
A Metaphysical Interpretation. Now, if I were to buy that book, not knowing too much about religion or dogmatic thoughts and teachings, what would I come out with after reading your 800 and something pages?
aside from some of the languages being totally intimidated, no, the book is actually about a metaphysical interpretation of you. Who are you? One of the most often asked questions that is given to me, Joy, mm-hmm. and when I go to do a seminar or a workshop, mm-hmm. is two questions. Why am I here, and who am I? And mm-hmm. interestingly enough, the first thing from me is this. Your answer is contained within your question. You are here to know who you are, and the biblical text, along with the Vedas, the Buddhist sutras, all tell us the exact same thing. And in a nutshell, it would be this. Joy, if I say to you that you are perfect, how would that hit you? Very literally.
Not true.
Okay, now here's the funny thing. Here's what you're actually saying. And by the way, part of that is the dogmatic approach of religion over the last 1,700 years. What you're actually saying is this, that we consider this thing as the creator is the epitome of perfection, correct?
Mm-hmm.
All right. And now here is the epitome of perfection, creating individual nature in the lack of perfection. Looking at it from that perspective, wouldn't it make that thing a joke?
Absolutely.
Why would the epitome of perfection create something less than? It can't. If it did, that would literally make it a hysterical joke. Now, here's the other thing. And by the way, that's actually contained within the pages of the Bible. And I actually show you in A Metaphysical Interpretation of the Bible where these ideas are located. The second thing I would say to you is this. Is if this thing that we term as the creator created in anything less than equality, and it does say it does do that,
mm-hmm.
then that would also make it a joke. That now means that it not only created in the epitome of perfection, but it created equal to the epitome of perfection even equal to itself, which was the purpose and the demonstration of the Christ. And what has been done due to the idea of power and control is to say, you can't be this, you are a sinner. And Sri Ramakrishna in India said in these words that if you repeat enough that you are a sinner, then you soon will be. The point of fact is, the most powerful thing that we as humans have is our minds, our brains, and whatever it emits the most, we become. Now, here's the deal. If we live through our higher divine nature, which we are all capable of, and we show from one moment to the next, then we indeed can become the very thing that the Creator created. Here's another silly thing that I found right within the pages of the biblical text. Are you ready for this? Joy.
I'm ready.
All right. If you were this creator, you were this thing that we call God, and you wanted your creation to be just like you, okay? That means you would want them to search. You would want them to seek how to be just like you. Now, that now gives us an implication. It implies that you're going to hide that as a secret. You with me? All right. Here's the question I'm going to ask you. How would you hide it, and where would you put it?
Well, actually, I'm not sure I could hide it from the Creator, and I...
No. You are the Creator.
I am the Creator. Where would I hide it?
You're hiding it from your creation.
From my own self. I couldn't.
Okay. And you're absolutely correct, because here's the deal. Everybody out there that's listening, if you were that energy and you were that level of being, here's what you would do. You would make it so simple that nobody would believe it. And the second thing that you would do is you would put it in plain sight, knowing nobody would believe it. In other words, it's you and I. We are all already enlightened. When you look at the story of the Buddha, the Buddha, Siddhartha, was born in an extremely wealthy family. I mean, the wealthiest that could have been in ancient Siam. And he decided, for whatever algorithm, I don't want to do this. I think there's more to life than being in this community and being in this money. And he looked and he looked and he looked and he got so frustrated. Everything he studied was because everybody else said so. And he went out and sat under a tree one day and went, this is bullpucky. And that's when he became Buddha. That's when he became enlightened. That's when he sat under the banyan tree and thought, all of these other people are crazy. And the point that I'm attempting to make is this. Anybody that follows anybody's other path, just like the Christ himself stated in the biblical text, that when you follow another's path, then you are being led by the blind who do not know you. Take a moment, look at your fingerprint. How many fingerprints are like yours in the entire universe?
Yeah, really? One.
Yours. So if you are following the literalism of another teacher, then you are being led astray from your own divine nature. And the point is, read the stuff, hear the stuff, practice the stuff, walk it through your shoes, and become the very thing that you already are. One of my teachers in India one day looked at me and said, young man, what is it that you seek? And Joy, I gave him all these I thought that were radiant, glorious answers. But they were the truth. I wanted to be like the Buddha. I wanted to be like the Christ. And he looked at me, a matter of factly, after I was all done with that, and he said, good, you will never become these. And I looked at him and went, what?
That's not good.
Well, no, but his answer after that was startling truth. Because he said, young man, even your master, the Christ, knew that as long as you seek a thing, you do not have what you seek.
Oh.
But when you realize that you already have what you seek, going back to what I posed to you about our Creator, when you realize that you already have what you seek, then what you seek comes to you. and you become the very thing that you seek.
Wow. That is a profound way to put it.
And
wow. So we seek all of these things. We want to become, and once we say we're already the who we want to become, then we are. Is that what you're saying?
What you have to do is accept it. Here's the deal. Most people think that they have to go to some guru. I mean, we've heard this thing that when the student is ready, the teacher will come. That's correct to a point. But what most Americans don't realize is simply this, is you are the embodied teacher of you.
Nobody else outside of me.
Other people can guide you.
Yeah.
Other people can assist you. But you are the one that ultimately learns and goes through the acts of realization through your very own experience. And see, here's the other side of that, is joy. If there's no such thing as a coincidence and there's no such thing as an accident, that means every event that you have in your life in some way is a teacher. The higher self begins teaching the lower self when the lower self realizes there's no mistake, there's no accident, there are only circumstances which educate me as the individual in my life. Once heard it said in India also this, that when another tells you what you need to do, consider that person as a dangerous person. And if you reflect back on this evening's show, not one time have you heard this individual say, you need to do this, you need to do that, this is required, that's required. That's because it is not. It's required through my eyes, not through yours. And until I can literally look through yours, there is no right within myself to say to you, this is a must-do, this is a have-to, this is a required thing. I am out of bounds. A teacher, a true teacher, teaches their own obsolescence to where you do not need the teacher. That's a true teacher. And the things that I have written in A Metaphysical Interpretation of the Bible, that's their intention, could sit here and so boldly say that if you're seeking consciousness, if you're seeking enlightenment, then this is actually the only book you would ever need to read. That's arrogant, so I'm not going to say that.
But right.
The matter is, if you want to know you, this book will certainly assist you in getting to that higher dynamic of self.
You know, I just had a something on my web chat, and they're saying they can't hear the sound, which is not good. Maybe we need to speak up, or I don't know. That's not good. They said they can't hear anything.
Here's the interesting thing.
Okay.
I have done many of these shows, have my own, actually, every Wednesday evening. It's called Aware Talk Radio. And this is not unusual. We all have to remember that we are dealing with technology. And when it comes to technology, sometimes technology in the human interface doesn't work.
That's right.
So if you would blog.
Oh, okay. She said it's now working. Okay. Maybe we just need to keep our mouths just like plastered to the phone so that whatever.
I've just got to be me. It's just a technological thing.
Right.
And I am absolutely certain of that. I mean, very literally, I do 5 or 6 shows a week. Blog Talk Radio, and this is actually very common. Everybody has to remember we have solar flares that we have to deal with, sunspots, and technology. And I lovingly state to people, this is, hey, if you have true interest in the subject, then you will hang in there until it appears before you.
Yeah, well, that's it. And, you know, we need to let each other know. And even though maybe we can't, you know, change it to fit what you need, what we're doing is we're interconnecting. We're listening to each other. And to me, that's opening our hearts and our hands, and we're becoming interplanetarian beings.
Absolutely. No question. We are more alive and more awake today, Joy, than we have ever been. As a humanity, and when I say humanity, I mean the entire world. What we don't realize is there's no accident in Iraq. There's no accident in the disagreements that we're seeing, because if we really, really, perceived the idea of disagreement. The idea of disagreement is nothing more than to lead us to agreement. Anger is to lead us to peace. Patience is to lead us to, or impatience is to lead us to patience. And so what we're experiencing is a birth of a new world. It's just the way it, we're going about it. We can agree or disagree. It's really irrelevant because whether we agree or disagree, it's going to occur anyway.
It's
going
to happen. Yeah. Evolution. Evolution, you know, to me is ruthless. It doesn't really have a lot of feeling, and it is going to go on, whether we like it or not. And I kind of listen to that intuition that comes through me often when I'm having a hard time, and that is that evolution is going to go on with or without you, and you might as well just kind of flow with it, right?
Absolutely. And remember one thing, lovely creature, and that's this, that when you're experiencing a hard time, you're just not agreeing with the experiencing with the experience that you're having. In other words, you are actually sitting back and judging it, is that you don't like it, that you would prefer to be different. And here's the idea. If you, one of the things I love to share with people is, look, when you're sitting with Mother Nature, you can learn so much. Take as an example, you're sitting by a stream or a creek. And in this creek, as you're sitting on their bank, you notice a leaf floating down the stream, and you begin to watch it. As you watch it, as you observe it, it goes into ripples or rapids, and sometimes it goes into an eddy where it loops around, loops around, loops around, and all of a sudden it shoots back out into the stream and goes through a slow space. My gosh, that is so close to the reality of life, it's not even funny. Because when we all look at our own lives, there are times when things are a piece of cake. We are in that slow-moving water, the stream, the flow, and it's just working and going and going. And then the next thing you know, we're in a place of turmoil. We're in the rapids, and we're just fighting and struggling to keep our head afloat. And the next thing we know, we find ourselves in a place of limbo, where nothing is going on forward, backward, sideways, or upside down. The leaf in a stream can show any individual any of those examples. And if it's going to happen to an inanimate leaf, you can count on the fact that it's going to happen to a human. And we are the only living thing in our reality that can distinguish between a good time and a bad time. Do you think an elephant realizes it's not having fun?
No.
No. Does a bird realize it's not enjoying the moment?
No.
Okay. We are the only living thing that has the opportunity to do that. You see, we don't realize the power of judgment, judging that a thing is good. I like this. I don't like that. I agree. I don't agree. Well, you know what? You can't agree or disagree with any human. It's just not possible. Why? Because you look at that stream, and I look at that stream, and I don't see the leaf, but you do. I don't see the minnow, but you do. I don't see the bottom, but you do. We see two different things. You and I can walk outside right now and look at a flower, and we can only look at that flower through your experience and through my experience. I cannot see that through your eyes, so I have no right to agree and or disagree with you. What I can do is I can look at you and smile and hug you and say, I appreciate and I accept you. And I accept the fact that we live in different perspectives, not different realities, simply different perspectives. And through that level of acceptance, we journey in a much more peaceful nature. But we have no right to say, this is good, this is bad, this is wrong, this is right. This I like, this I don't, because it doesn't matter.
It really doesn't matter. When you actually, you do give readings, am I correct?
That is correct.
When people would like to get a reading with you, how would they do that? How would they find you and contact, you know, and say, I'd like a reading? I mean, how does that happen?
I'll go ahead and get my phone number. It's area code 775-826-5999. Again, that's area code 775-826-5999. And basically what you do is you call me up, you set the appointment, and let me share some of the with everybody before we continue, and that's this.
Right.
Every 7 years, the ARE, or the Edgar Cayce Foundation, looks through the entire continental United States for 250 people to serve on a panel. I've been doing this for years, and I got a letter in the mail, which I thought was a joke, and it said I was recommended to them. I decided to respond to the letter after several weeks and found out, hey, this is legit. And then the most fun I've had with the use of intuition was their tests, what they put you through, what they want to see that you know. And to become an intuitive on their panel, you have to receive an excellent rating, whatever that means. I suppose it's a subjective opinion.
Mm-hmm.
But when you go through several people and you receive an excellent rating on what you do, it's kind of like, whoa, okay. So anyway, that's how I became a member of ARE. I don't take what I do when I'm doing intuitive sessions with people seriously, but I do take them genuinely, and here's why. There's so many, quote, psychic hotlines out there, and I don't buy into those, don't even know if I care for them, even though I realize that's judgment, because they, one, not sure they know what they're doing, not sure they don't, but I've seen some of them in action, and I'm uncomfortable, is what I would say. Myself, the only thing I ask a person to do is two things. One, have organized in your mind of what you want to know. And then what you do is you ask me. Now, here's the interesting thing. I read for people literally all over the globe. Shanghai, China.
Wow.
Sydney, Australia. St. Petersburg, Russia.
Sao
Paulo, Brazil, all over the continental United States, and Canada. I mean, you name the country, and it's amazing to me because the time of the morning with somebody in Tokyo, Japan, or Shanghai, China has to be up just so they can talk to me, or somebody in Europe just so that we can connect. And it's a pleasure and an honor to me because they actually do it. So.
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, I hear you. And that's basically what I do when it comes to the intuitive sense with people. I love people. If I can.
Well, do people, do individuals have, would you say they're led to you and you're led to them? Or, you know, I mean, it's like we kind of connected to have you on my show, and I'm not sure how, but I went with intuition.
We all do the very same thing. Have you ever met, you're walking down the street and all of a sudden you had an encounter with a person and you just absolutely adored the person and you thought you were silly because you adored the person because you didn't know him?
Yeah.
Right? We
yeah.
all do that. But we all do that is the point. And the truth of the matter is what you had was a soul recognition. An ancient memory coming into the present. And then you have those very same people. Shoot, we can take infants, newborns that have been in this world for a day, right?
Mm-hmm.
2 days. And you're home with the infant, and your best friend in the whole world walks into the house and says, oh, can I hold it? And you hand the infant to this best friend of yours, and all of a sudden, the infant goes berserk. Why?
Yep.
Why? The very same reason.
Just not part of that.
No, you're correct. They sense the energy of the person. They sense the deceit, the deception, energy which it doesn't like is there. And as we grow, I believe we're, in some respects, we're more intelligent as small children, and we kind of get number or dumb as we get older, because we get sucked into so many dramas, so many arenas as we get older. But as children, we don't, and yet the children aren't accepted as knowing anything, if you will.
That's true. I was wondering, have you ever heard of a psychic, George, what is his name, George Michael Scallion or Michael Scallion?
Yeah, I know who Scallion is. Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Were you involved with him, or I actually?
I don't. No, I don't. I'm not in alignment with some of his projections.
Okay.
I know that, and notice how I worded that. I said alignment, didn't say agreement or disagreement, because Scallion is about earth changes and geologic changes.
Yeah.
They are coming. They are coming.
Yeah.
But part of what he portrays, you know, and there's a filter that we all look through. Scallion could end up being absolutely accurate, but I'm not sure. And the only reason I say that is because the area that I live, which is northern Nevada, I still see to this second, even though since February of this year, we've had close to 6,000 earthquakes.
Whoa.
Oh, yeah.
Up there near Reno, you haven't you?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
But the interesting thing is I don't see anything other than an island here. And Scallion says, no, that's going to be gone. And my sense says, no, it's going to be an island. And we look at a gal named Lori Torrey, T-O...
I know who that is, absolutely.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
She is the closest to what I've seen since I was about 8 years old.
Oh, you saw this map.
Yes.
Close. My goodness.
Yeah, very, very, very close. I could talk with things about the Bay Area, but I'm not going to do that because you live there and people live there. There's no sense in running around in stark terror. Yeah. The only thing I say to all people is simply this. Every human being is going to be exactly where they're supposed to be when all of these earth changes take place. And if you'd like to get an idea of what these earth changes are, there's an interesting website, which I have nothing to do with. It was actually emailed to me, and I looked at it and thought, yeah, this guy is good, or this gal, because he doesn't give a name. It's called Divulgence, D-I-V-U-L-G-E-N-C, divulgence.net, www, of course. Go there. Look at it.
Okay.
Because it's already going on.
It's already happening. Well, you know, maybe like George Michael Scallion, maybe they're just like 100 years ahead of their time, but somehow, you know, the universe said, well, okay, go ahead and prepare the people or whatever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I would think that would be a hard lot. I mean, basically nobody wants to hear it. You know, they're not very popular, and they certainly aren't spreading what we feel comfortable with. But yet, you look at Louisiana and Florida and parts of Texas, and they really are sinking. You know, they're going underwater. And you look at George Scallion's map, and you think, the guy was right. You know, this is happening, this is happening. And, you know, I don't know. It's a little confusing to me because I feel like they're so ahead of their time, and they don't know when the time is, is going to happen.
When you look at one of the things I've done, Joy, is for, 30 years of my life, as I've studied ancient texts literally from all over the world, Mesoamerica, meaning Maya, Middle Eastern text, Far Eastern text, and I began to notice and realize the different prophecies that were taking place, the common threads. And one of the things that I can assure humanity is what has already been stated, that everybody's going to be where they are, whether they like it or not, one. Two, you can go to my website at Hairfield, HairField.com. Mm-hmm. And what I do is every year is I give my predictions or forecasts for the year. And you can literally go and you can get a free download of what Stephen says 2008 is going to look like as we progress. And so far, it has been right on the money.
And what is that website again, Stephen?
It is www.hairfield, HairField.com.
Right. And where do they go? Is it right on the home page?
No, well, all they have to do is click on schedule.
Okay.
And then what they do is they scroll down the schedule page until you see 2008 predictions. Click on it. Here's the fun thing. You can listen to it, and you can download it, and it's all for free. you can do whatever it is that you choose to it. You can rebut it. You can laugh at it. It
makes
no difference to me. But when you hear it and then you look at what's already gone on, seeing as how we are in what, we're entering June tomorrow.
Right.
And when you hear what's actually being said with the floods in the Midwest, the tornadoes in places where they are not ordinarily seen, you're going to be going, wait a second, what's this guy doing? Where is he coming from? And then when I start talking about the geologic activity, it's going to stop and make people think. And here's the other interesting thing. We did a show called Global Warning, not Global Warming, Global Warning. All right.
Okay.
And I think it's Mother Earth saying, this, because of karma, is what you are choosing. And because you are choosing this, I have no alternative but to give this to you.
Karma.
And she's showing us.
Well, that would mean that we have a choice.
Yes, we have a choice.
We have a choice. So we could actually stop some of this that's coming up by changing our ways. Is that what you're saying?
What we can do is take it in a new direction. Can we stop it? That answer is no, but taking it in a new direction, yes.
Okay.
Let me give all of your listeners an example of that for a moment.
Hi.
And a lot of people go, whoa, this guy is just too much. I don't know. But let's take a look at southeastern United States. Georgia, Alabama, they were having a drought. They were bickering over who gets what water and wanting the federal government to intercede before they had a civil war. Well, if we think back, according to the media, there were mayors that people were protesting that were holding prayer sessions that were – my point is everybody was focused on the creation of rain, water, and moisture.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me a second. Look at the southeastern United States. Aren't they getting pounded by storm after storm after storm after storm? Interesting. You mean to tell me, Stephen, that we have that much influence? You know what? The thing I would say to everybody would be this. In the Essene Gospels of Peace, also known as the Dead Sea Scrolls, it says this, that a single human thought is mightier than the greatest of earthquakes and mightier than the lightning that strikes the or cleaves the mighty oak. Now, it says that. The Dead Sea Scrolls are 2,000-plus years old, and the Essene said that a single human thought has the power to even overcome death. Now, if they knew that 2,000 years ago, what have we done? Have we progressed or have we digressed? The reason we've digressed is because we've gotten into the small self, physical self, being the dominant idea of human, which it is not. It's the second perspective of human. But what we've allowed is power and control, fear-based thinking, to be the dominant attribute of life. And because of that, everything that we think becomes a reality in our lives. We've all seen What to Bleep. They aren't kidding. And by the way, take part in a documentary that's coming out later this summer called Metaphysia. And it's like What to Bleep, but puts it into warp drive so we can see what it is that we're doing. And what we're doing is exactly what's being shared with your listeners this evening. We are polluting our own selves. We are destroying our own reality simply by what we think. You know, people go, oh, come on, man. But, you know, I was asked by one of my teachers one day in India. He looked at me and said, young man, what if what you term as your God heard everything that you thought? Not only did it hear that thought, but it considered that thought a request to give you that as an experience. Would you change the way that you think?
I gave you that. You know, I have a question from one of our listeners, and she says, has your guest heard of the studies done on group meditations on an international basis, such as those where individuals concentrate on peace, and how this affected the crime levels across the planet?
My answer to that is yes, I have. In fact, the one that comes to mind is Greg Braden. and a group experiment that he did in the city of Washington, D.C. And what he did is he took 50 people, and he had them basically encircle one of the most crime-ridden neighborhoods of Washington, D.C. For a period of 24 hours, what they did is focused on peace. And the interesting thing was, is here's what the police chief of Washington, D.C. had to say after 24 hours. Ladies and gentlemen, it was scary because our crime rate went down by as much as 75%.
Wow.
That was scary?
Well, I mean, you know, all of a sudden, where did it come from? It's like, why? You know, because to him, he's just looking at the paperwork. Wow.
And
so
we also, most of us have heard about Masaru Emoto and his experiments with.
Oh, yeah.
All right. And
amazing.
He did the same thing. No, I believe that Wayne Dyer is correct when we look at the idea or notion of power of intention. We are just very flippant with our minds. We are very flippant with the most powerful thing that we have. And it's the thing that creates enlightenment. It's the thing that creates progression or digression. And here the interesting thing is Americans per se, Joy, are not taught how to use our minds. We allow them to flail, very literally. If people were to stop and think about it for a second, this thing between our ears makes the decisions in our lives. And you know what's really scary? Is this. Most decisions are made subconsciously, not consciously. And most decisions are based on conditioned nature through what we've experienced out of our past. So most decisions that we make are made unconsciously, not consciously. And the greatest gift that all of us have is we can live consciously, which means we're living in the moment, not the power of now. Love Eckhart Tolle, he's made that idea famous, but now is the only place you can live, and I'm talking about the present. The present, the only thing it's missing is the ribbon and the bow, because that's your gift. That's where you are.
That's where we are, and that's it. There is no past. There's no future. We're now. And yet you hear about parallel universe. You know, we're almost out of time, and I really want to go ahead and give out your website and the way that people can reach you and find out about you.
My website is www.hairfield.com. My email address, Joy, is Stephen@hairfield.com. And you know what? If you would like to call me, because I love to chat with people, do it from all over the world, my phone number is in Northern Nevada is area code 775-826-5999. And if I might, for a brief moment, what I love to do is leave a message of consciousness with people.
All right.
So my message for all of you out there would be simply this. We are created through and by divine substance. And because we've been given the gift of reality and consciousness by the divine, we can choose to live through that higher state of being. And because of that higher state of being, it leads us constantly and continually to the perfection of our own selves. And here's the interesting thing. We can shorten that path because it's already who we are. Love people, Joy. It's a pleasure being here. And if I can help any human become the best that they can be, then please contact me.
Wow. Well, thank you so much. I'm sure a lot of people will be contacting you. I have a lot of people that are, they come in, they download the program, and as they call you or contact you, I'm sure that they will find, as I found tonight, that you're coming from the heart to the heart. And as long as that's the case, we have to move forward. We've got.
Well, you know what? Look at your body. Can you walk backwards very easily?
No. You got to go forward.
Hey, Joy, really, thank you for having me on your show. I'd love to be back.
Thank you so much. You take care.
I will. Thank you.
Bye-bye.